Hey, are you ready to move your life? I mean, really move it? It's time to turn up the dial on your energy, your health, your sport performance, your happiness, and your relationships. If you want to live with more freedom, more adventure, more passion, more fun, and more success, if you're ready to get your brain in the game and achieve the most out of every area of your life, then it's time to move to live and live to move with your host, Jill Summers.
Hello, you made it, you're here, you are in the right place if you are ready to dial up your life. This is Jill with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching. This podcast is designed to guide, coach, support, and challenge you to live your life out loud. You know, move to live and live to move. I am incredibly excited to be here with a very special person today and in a very special place. We are actually recording this from the Vail Valley in Colorado, and literally we are sitting outside looking at a blue sky with these amazing swirls of white cloud and this beautiful mountain behind us, aspens, and we are taking the risk of hearing some birds. So you may hear some chirping in the background because we really wanted to make this real and want you to be able to feel like you're here with me. And before I introduce my guest today, I have a question for her. There's this amazing smell in the air, and I've been trying to figure out if that's sage or juniper. Do you know?
I think it's mostly juniper. We do have a lot of sage in this area as well. I think it's probably a mix of both of those.
It's so distinctive, and every time I smell it, I'm like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm home. Okay, so there's a little bit of painting the scenery for you. So as you're listening to this, regardless if you are biking, hiking, washing dishes, or maybe supposed to be at work, I want you to feel like you're in the mountains with us. We saw some deer on the hill last night and saw some other tracks while we were doing our hike this morning. We got a hike in before we got this podcast put together. So imagine that you're here with us. I want to introduce to you today Christine Perangeli. I did not have to practice her name because I've been able to say it for years. but it's such a beautiful Italian name, and it is pronounced Perangeli. She is with us today. She actually lives here in the Vail Valley, and Christine is a certified master nutrition therapist, and it's really incredible to have her today, here today because she has some really great insights for all of us to learn about the power of nutrition, both in our day-to-day eating as well as some sport nutrition. She's going to share some insight with us on that. And we're also going to hear a little bit about her journey, how she got here, how she has manifest living this dream life that she didn't even was unable to dream about 20 years ago. And we're just really just sitting here reflecting on what that journey has been like for her. So we're going to hear about that as well. So welcome, Christine. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
We have been chatting just a little bit before the podcast about how she landed in Vail. She's originally from Wisconsin, Appleton area, and it's been a very incredible journey, and I'm going to ask her to share some of that with us because it's all about being able to manifest what you really want in your life. And for those of you who know me, who have done coaching with me, or have even listened to some of the other podcasts, you know that I'm all about wanting to empower people to manifest the life that they love living, not just getting through their life because this is the way it is, but getting really clear, deciding on what lights you up, and then figuring out what those steps are that help you get there. So, Christine, can you take us through your manifestation process? Some of it probably was unconscious, some of it was conscious, but how you actually got here in the Vail Valley from Wisconsin?
So I had been living in Madison. I went to the UW and got an education degree and graduated in 1991. And I taught in Madison for 9 years, met my husband in 92. So we were both Wisconsinites, but we really had a vision for wanting to be in the mountains. And we got here, it was quite a circuitous route. In 2000, we got married in Wisconsin. We moved to Raleigh, North Carolina for a year. We didn't love that move, so we decided to drop everything and we went to Europe for 6 months. And we bike toured through France, Italy, and Switzerland. And we landed in Italy and studied the language for 3 months. Actually, September 11th, 2001 happened while we were there.
Wow.
So that was a really amazing thing because everybody that was in the States was really going through the depths of that. And we were going through it on a much more superficial level. Everybody in our family wanted us to come home and we felt much safer in Verona, Italy at the time. So we stayed there and finished out the year and finished out our intention. And then we arrived back home during the holidays of 2001 and ended up coming out to stay with a girlfriend who said, "You've always wanted to be mountain folk and your stuff's in storage and you have no jobs. You have no reason not to come out here." So that was why we made, that was the logistics of what got us to that move. And to back up to 20 years ago this summer, it was the first time I had ever been in the state of Colorado. And from Wisconsin, obviously the visual and the lighting up of the feelings is pretty incredible. So that, those feelings that I had just stayed with me for those, I guess it was just 5 years between being here for the first time and landing here for good. We did move back to Wisconsin in 2012 for a year and just in our hearts really felt like we wanted to make it back to the Vail Valley. We had two kids at Vail Valley Medical Center. I have two daughters who were both born here. And what we always say about the Vail Valley is what it does well, it does really well. There are definitely limitations to living here. We don't have a Target within 45 minutes. We don't have some pretty simple things. So people that make a choice to live here, you know who you are and what makes you tick. And, you know, it's not easy to go out on a Tuesday night and listen to music downtown. That we don't have, but, you know, we have a lot of world-class things and lifestyle things that really feed us.
Yeah, what is it about the area that you resonate so strongly with, makes you love living here?
For me, a lot of it is about, you know, from a simplistic view, the weather is amazing. We have 300 days of sunshine. We have cool, crisp mountain mornings. We do not have humidity. Our average humidity in the summer is between 10 and 15%. And not everybody appreciates that. I don't do very well in humidity, so I love the way I feel. When I was just in Wisconsin a week and a half ago, and it actually wasn't very humid, but typically that kind of humidity really shuts me down. I feel sleepy and loggy and not super vibrant and alive. So I always get to feel that way out here. And even in the middle of July, our mountain mornings start between 50 and 55 degrees, I enjoy every bit of that. That's not hard for me. And I think that's a very individual thing. Mm-hmm. I love the transition of seasons. I love how functional winter is here. I didn't love winter growing up in Wisconsin, but I love winter here because I can be out snowshoeing. I can be out skiing. What's hard to understand is we don't have humidity in the winter either. So that bone chilling cold is not what we have going on here, and again, 300 days of sunshine.
I think it's the sunshine that makes such a difference. And one of the things I think is interesting is when you're so used to something, you don't even know that it could be different or it could be affecting you in ways that are contrary to feeling more alive or feeling healthy. And of course, that's the truth with food too, which is something that we're going to definitely dive into. Yeah. But I want to congratulate you on manifesting this life that you've wanted to live and maybe didn't even realize it until you came out here.
I think
you said 20 years ago.
20 years ago was the first time I was here.
First time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago this summer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you are a certified master nutrition therapist. Okay, really? What the heck is that?
So,
bring us up to speed.
And
we
a lot of
know.
People want I usually say the whole enchilada. A lot of people in my field just call themselves nutritionist. I think that it's clearly, it confuses people, and logically so. Most people's paradigm for somebody who does my, you know, a nutritionist's work would be a registered dietitian. Master nutrition therapy. So I went back to school when my youngest went to kindergarten because I really was sick of living with the decisions made by an 18-year-old that went to school for education. And I stayed home and did the stay-at-home mom role for several years and loved that. And when it was time to get back into a career, the thought of going back into education just didn't light me up. So the universe sort of spoke, and I had a lot of different things come together to culminate in me deciding to go back to school at a school in Denver called Nutrition Therapy Institute. But I don't live in Denver. I'm 2 hours into the mountains, so I did everything online. Mm. And that program took me 5 years. Our Wisconsin move was in the middle of that, so I took a break. But finally finished up, did my thesis on adrenal fatigue, which set me up for my certification as a master nutrition therapist. And sort of the simplistic difference is a registered dietitian uses more of a standard model of care and works from the recommendation. They often work in hospital settings with the recommendations of the USRDA. For example, saying that the best way to get our calcium is typically from dairy. So as a master nutrition therapist, we were trained, you know, using whole foods and targeted supplementation to meet everybody's bio-individual needs. So not everybody that has type 2 diabetes has the exact same set of circumstances, mm-hmm. okay? And over 65% of the population is lactose intolerant. So dairy is not going to be, not only is it not the best, most bioavailable source of calcium, but it's not going to be the solution for everybody.
You just said a really big word, and I love this word. And in fact, you are the one who introduced me to this word many years ago, but bio-individuality. Mm-hmm. I think the more you talked with me about this and what it means, I think this is something that would really be beneficial for people to have a better understanding of. So can you speak about that for a moment?
So everybody's needs are different based on their genetics, based on their childhood. Something as seemingly innocuous as having gut health issues as an infant, if you were put on antibiotics as a young child, that impacts your gut microbiome and your gut health for the rest of your life. So there might be some remediation around that. Or even if a client told me, one of the questions on my intake form is, have you been on antibiotics several times, and how many times have you been on antibiotics? That is impacting your gut health. Your gut is your second brain. Your gut health impacts everything in your body. It impacts your brain, it impacts your sleep, it impacts your immune system. So we are a very whole system, and a holistic approach will look at everybody's specific needs. Obviously, your lifestyle, what you eat specifically. Obviously, those are things that it seems intuitive to know that they are impacting your health.
But very different from the USRDA guidelines, which say women at the age of 25 need to get this amount of D and this amount of C and so forth. And, you know, all these other different categories of people, but they're all lumped together. So you're saying that your genetic background, where you come from, even early experiences have an impact. Absolutely. On what types of foods work for you, don't work for you, may set you up for depression or anxiety. You didn't say those words, so but you're nodding your head, so you would agree. And so that's where the bio-individuality comes in. Okay,
and
I love that.
And when clients come to see me, I had a client that really helped me resonate with this specific thing. I was meeting with her, and she really just wanted to lose 10 pounds and sort of tone up. But as we unpacked her story and went through her intake, and I would ask her, what other health conditions do you have? Oh, I really don't have anything. But then as it came down, she had an autoimmune dysfunction. Mm. She had Raynaud's syndrome. She had had some sinus infections over the winter. So it's interesting. I have to sometimes help clients see that it's not just about the food. It's often about the things that have been impacting your life. And maybe the food helped create that.
Yeah.
And maybe that, you know, created choices that you've made around food. But, you know, therapy, nutrition therapy is about a lot of different things and a lot of conditions that people don't think can be helped by what they're putting in their mouth.
Absolutely.
They can be. They can be. And, you know, conventional medicine just isn't trained around nutrition.
Yeah, so what do you say when and I hear this a lot when I talk to friends or family, even some of my clients, they say, well, that's not what the doctor told me to do. Or when I ask my doctor if my nutrition can affect this particular scenario, eczema or migraine headaches, they say, no, it's not about nutrition. And these people, we've been trained to give so much of our power to our medical doctors. And of course, our medical doctors can't know everything, right? They can't.
That's right.
Just like, you know, a therapist That's can't right. know everything in Western medicine. But mm-hmm. what do you say to that?
I try to respectfully let them know that most doctors have had a one day in service in nutrition. And, you know, the other piece of that is that those recommendations are evolving on a daily basis in the science that we're coming up with. For instance, if you're a GI specialist who's not addressing probiotics and gut health and the gut microbiome, that's everything that's been researched in the last 5 years. So if you're not addressing that, I recently had a client tell me, she said, I asked my GI specialist if it was okay that I take this probiotic, and his response was, well, I guess it can't hurt. So to me, that's a very closed off answer because he is not paying attention to the fact that all the science in his field in the last 5 to 10 years has been around the gut microbiome. That's hard for me. And again, I try to be incredibly respectful. They, like you said, they have a lot on their chart each day and they don't have a lot of time.
Yeah. And I love that the way you just said that. So respecting their ability and the knowledge that they have. And then also, here's where I would like to empower our listeners is to start taking your health more into your own responsibility. In other words, you know, learn from people who, like you, have been studying and the other GI specialists who have been studying the impact that our foods have on us. That's and right. antibiotics and how we can turn that gut back around, but to take more self-responsibility to have a better understanding, I think, rather than handing all of our power over to somebody who may have a good, strong educational background in a particular area, but maybe not in everything.
That's right. That's right.
What else would you say are some of the top areas of... I'm going to say this, but I might regret saying it out loud, but nutrition mistakes that people make because the ADA says it's good for us or this is a strong direction. What would you say about that?
One of the big ones, and I think so many of us are waking up to this, one of the big ones that big myths we are dispelling is the cholesterol myth. There was actually a book written called The Cholesterol Myth. A few myths around that. First of all, we all need cholesterol. So in a holistic world, if your cholesterol is below 150, that's pretty unhealthy because we need it to make our hormones and we need it to synthesize vitamin D. There are a lot of really great things that cholesterol does for you. And what we did based on faulty studies 50 years ago, was we started cutting out high cholesterol foods like eggs, which are really the perfect food. And we started cutting out a lot of saturated fats. Now, I'm not one to say that everybody should be eating marbled steak every day of the week. However, there are healthy amounts of saturated fats, especially that found in things like coconut oil, which is a plant-based and is very heart healthy. It has lauric acid in it. What we've learned is that the inflammation from inflammatory foods, like sugar is an inflammatory food, that is a bigger driver of the cholesterol number. But again, the sort of the second piece around this is we're learning that saturated fat isn't necessarily the cholesterol driver, but we're also learning that cholesterol isn't the devil. And our body makes most of the cholesterol that's involved with that number that you see when you have your blood work done. There are differing opinions, but somewhere around 15% of your total cholesterol number actually comes from your diet. The rest is made by your body.
Okay.
So your body will make what it needs, and the diet is just sort of the rest of the piece.
And do you think, is there a bio-individuality per person? So
Absolutely.
It's not just
Absolutely.
This magical number we all need to be under?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, when some people go into ketosis, which is fat burning, that works really well for some people, and it does not work well for everybody. Mm-hmm. So if you're out there and the other podcast you're going to listen to next is a podcast on ketosis, know that that may work really well for you, or it may make you anxious. Maybe you're an athlete that needs a little bit more carb. I'm a big fan of the podcasts out there, and I listen to a few of them that talk about how it needs to be about you and your journey.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. You know, I in all the coaching that I do and just observing human behavior, I've found that we tend to like black and white.
Yes.
Because there's this false sense of security there. It's like it's either this or it's that. Mm-hmm. And what, you know, I realize over and over and over again is almost everything has a lot more gray yeah. than we would like. And that can be uncomfortable because we want to just go, okay, this is what I have to do and I'm going to stick to that. But it doesn't really work that way, does it?
No.
That's where the bio-individuality
There's
really comes
a lot of
in.
Nuance
yeah.
and everybody's going to have their own path. Mm-hmm.
So one of the myths is cholesterol. What would be mm-hmm. another myth?
You know, to address maybe the gluten-free
Yeah,
phrase.
Let's talk about that.
So I don't want to dive too deep on this. I think it's over-discussed in general. But I myself found out doing an elimination detox that I lead every year. The first time I did it was 2010, and I myself found out that I was gluten intolerant, that I was having digestive issues that I thought it was just because I couldn't eat and then be on a run. When I found out really it was that I couldn't eat gluten and be on a run. And I did the detox and I felt fantastic. And for a few months I stayed gluten-free. And then I played with that a little bit one night. And I had the same old symptoms that I used to mm-hmm. have on my trail run the next morning. And that was a real aha moment. And so for me, finding that out liberated me. And though most of my clients say, no, 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 don't take away my toast. I will tell you that if you are gluten intolerant, it becomes easier to give up whatever it is that you are attached to because feeling good is even
worth
better. It's worth it. So I don't play with that for myself. And I always tell clients, you know, when you fall off and you have an episode and you have a symptom, whatever that might be, if it's joint pain or get a sinus infection or if it's digestive issues, then you've learned powerful information. There are no bad moves. There's just powerful information that comes. But the other thing I always say to my clients is, you know, gluten-free garbage is still garbage. And so my favorite
cookies,
right,
gluten-free bread,
all those things have more fillers. They're still highly processed. They're often more caloric. They often have more sugar. And really at the end of the day, I would much rather have you staying away from sugar, which we know is an inflammatory food for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Gluten impacts a lot of people, not every single person. I always say, you know, going 21 days without it, the most you're going to lose is 5 pounds probably. But, you know, that craze and everything that's been built up around it. I tell my clients, I don't want you replacing bread with gluten-free bread. I want you replacing bread with a bed of spinach or spaghetti squash or some sauteed vegetables or cauliflower mashers under your spaghetti sauce or whatever it is.
I can tell you I've been gluten-free and it's been a process, but I don't even know how long, maybe 8 years or something. And I have found that when I do any of the gluten-free substitutes, because let's face it, sometimes I want that cinnamon raisin toast, absolutely, you know, and I'll get the gluten-free version. And that to me now feels like cheating, but mm-hmm. it is cheating because I don't feel good.
Right.
I do feel sluggish mm-hmm. and bloated, and mm-hmm. I get mentally foggy. And so mm-hmm. there is still something in
right.
those products that right. isn't great for me.
And a lot of people who are gluten intolerant really have problems with other grains as well.
Yeah.
So that is something, that is a threshold that I always have my clients sort of test out a little mm-hmm. bit. Maybe wild rice is going to be fine. Maybe gluten-free, non-contaminated oats are going to be fine. And maybe they're not. Maybe they're still going to make you feel a little wonky. Yeah. And once you start dialing in these things and eliminating, you become very in tune.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you give up sugar and your taste buds become recalibrated and a green apple tastes like a donut.
Yeah.
That happens. And so everybody has to figure out their own parameters and what makes. And once you dial in, it becomes easier to see what else is impacting your health.
And, you know, I think there's something that I really resonate with what you said. It is when you feel better,
mm-hmm.
it's so worth it. You know, people are like, I have some clients too. I don't want to give up the toast in the morning. I'm addicted to the toast. Or what do you mean I can't have a couple cookies, you know, a couple times a week? Or when you feel better, giving up those things
right.
is really easy. But until you feel better, you don't even realize how much you don't feel good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for some, I mean, for a condition like rheumatoid arthritis, now we're not just talking about, oh, I feel a little bloated after I have a piece of bread. Now we're talking about my joints don't function and mm-hmm. my hands don't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gluten and dairy for somebody with something like RA, that's a no-brainer. Really almost any autoimmune dysfunction, the very first line of defense has to be an elimination diet to see how you feel without those things.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few people with those conditions that are not somehow impacted.
You know, that's such a great point, because a lot of times when people are feeling that depth of discomfort or pain,
mm-hmm.
and then what do? They're less active, mm-hmm. typically, because they don't want to feel that kind of pain, or activity
right.
feels worse. It's easy to think that I'm this way and I'm always going to be this way, which then sends us into this hopeless place,
mm-hmm.
which then, of course, affects the foods that we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had experiences of people who have made some of these changes and have increased their activity and
absolutely.
Well-being?
Absolutely. I have a girlfriend who, on her own, actually, she's a longtime girlfriend. I've known her since elementary school, who has lupus, a very serious autoimmune dysfunction. And there's quite a range of how that can manifest, in a range of symptoms and a range of severity. And she, in particular for her, adopted a vegan lifestyle. And I'm not saying that that's, again, bio-individual, not the blanket landing pad for everybody with an autoimmune condition, but for her, she has been able to maintain an incredibly active lifestyle by managing it with a vegan diet. And it's very hard for her to talk to other people who say, but I can't give up this or that, because the power of how she feels mm-hmm. having given that up.
Mm-hmm.
I had a client, we were working on her, she had a hemoglobin A1C, which is your 3-month average of blood sugar. That was 5.9. It's high. It's higher than you want it to be. It can be indicated that you're heading down a type 2 diabetes path. And so she wanted to find ways to manage her blood sugar. So we worked on just blood sugar balance, which is an issue for a lot of people. And it really can impact everything from mood, anxiety, depression, just energy levels. So we worked on bringing some more healthy fats, protein at every meal, stabilizing blood sugar, not going too long with between, you know, maybe having a meal, a small snack mid-morning, mid-afternoon, stabilizing her blood sugar. And in 3 to 4 months, she was able to bring it from 5.9 to 5.2. And, you know, she worked. I always say to my clients, what I'm going to give you is simple, but I'm not saying it's easy.
Right.
Because we all have a lot of other stuff.
Hmm.
You know, I always
say, like what?
Therapist is in my name,
mm-hmm.
right? in my title, I should say, there are a lot of mental blocks about what we can and cannot do in terms of changing what's on our plate. There are a lot of emotions behind what's on our plate.
Yeah. A lot more goes into food than we
absolutely
slow down and pay attention to.
So my meal plans, which are based on just whole foods, I'm not reinventing the wheel. Even the detox that I run, the 28-day detox, it's whole foods. It's not supplements and shakes, which, again, like you were saying, that feels easier sometimes.
Yeah, right, because that's a black and white.
Mm-hmm. When I hand people some recipes and some suggestions and a very general grocery list, sometimes it's a little unsteadying.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean you're not going to tell me what to have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the next 28 days?
Mm-hmm. But that's an education, too. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they come out of that empowered to make some of their own decisions.
The goal is to get to the end of 28, and I do 28 days instead of 10 or shorter or 14 because I want... Somewhere between 21 and 28 days, a switch is flipped. Oh, I could do this for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
I could keep going. Huh, I gave up sugar and caffeine. Why do I need to go back down that rabbit hole, bring those things back in my life, and then have to give them up again in the future? How were they positively impacting my health?
Yeah.
They weren't. So why not just leave them out?
I've done a couple of detoxes, maybe 4 or 5, and I can tell you the first week is tough because I'm getting rid of some things that maybe I, you know, slowly brought back on board. Mm. And then the second week, I'm starting to feel a bit better, feeling more energized. And now I'm staying in more, I'm cooking more. Yes. I'm mastering new recipes, which is actually really fun. And you're right, by the end, I don't want to go back because I do feel so good.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, each time I slide back into, because we're so surrounded with these other foods on every corner that we drive past. But each time I tend to learn one more thing that sticks with me.
Yes.
And is non-negotiable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If people were interested in doing a detox with you, how would they find out more information about that?
So at my website, I do run it every January online, and there was an Eventbrite registration on my page last year. So that's something to be looking for. I start promoting it. I have a Facebook page that I would love to invite any listeners to come and join, where I give updates. And then, of course, it would be on my website. So my Facebook page is Profound Wellness of Vail, LLC. And my website is profoundwellness.fit.
Profoundwellness.fit. So if you want more information on how you can be included in Christine's detox, so you said you'd do one in January. Would you do one in the fall by chance?
I do. I think I'm going to start. I'm as soon as my kiddos go back to school and I can think a little bit more about it, I would like to start launching them quarterly, because I think I've often done mine in October. And what I love about October is the kids have sort of settled back into school. Those of us that are parents are a little bit more into our rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
September can be a little jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And we're ready to set ourselves up for success during the holidays. January is sort of natural. I think we all know why. That feels like a great time to set that goal. But I do like the preemptive strike.
Yep. I like that.
And feeling good and feeling lighter. So, and then usually around March, people are ready to start thinking about it again, March,
right.
April. So I think I'm going to start running them quarterly, just because I think that people are ready to
good.
Sort of have that.
You know, people, pay attention to her website. Make sure you go there. She's got some great information on there, some recipes, and her Facebook page as well. It's a really great opportunity to stay connected with her and everything that she's sharing with you today. So we're going to make a bit of a track shift. Over the weekend, Christine and I and a couple other people engaged in a physical challenge, and we signed up for, trained for, and we're planning on doing a biking event called the Triple Bypass here in Colorado. It is a 120-mile ride across 3 mountain ranges, totaling 10,000 feet of elevation gain. Unfortunately, the event was canceled due to forest fires. Unfortunately, because there were forest fires in the first place, and hoping that the land and the people are as safe as possible, they needed to cancel the event because all hands on deck needed to be paying attention to the fire and needed to take away some of the very important people that were going to be on the course with us to support us. So we weren't able to do that, but we did do our own ride, which landed us in Aspen. There are worse places to do a ride. It wasn't too shabby. Ended up being almost 80 miles on a very hot day. But what I want to talk with Christine about now is this big thing called fat adaptation. She mentioned the word earlier, ketosis. How do we incorporate some sound nutritional behaviors while we're being active, whether it's biking like we did over the weekend or marathon running or trail running, whatever that might be. So my question to you to sort of get this conversation, part of the conversation started, is first of all, can you tell us what ketosis is and how does it affect us as active people, as endurance athletes?
So something that I've tried to use as a plan as an athlete myself is fat adaptation. Now, fat adaptation and ketosis are two different things. Ketosis is basically when you are fat adapted to the point where your body is using ketones as its main fuel source instead of glucose, which is your body's first.
And what are ketones?
So ketone bodies are the form of energy that gets used when you are eating approximately 70% fat in your day as a macro, very little protein, probably about 15%, and usually 10% or less of carbohydrates. So when you are in ketosis, you are your body has no choice but to be using those ketone bodies as its primary source of fuel. So your body naturally wants to burn sugar. And most of us, especially as endurance athletes, like to feed it sugar. What do we have when we're on a long bike ride? We have, the honey stinger waffles or the gels or the sports drinks that keep us just burning sugar. And I heard a great analogy recently that I thought was really intuitive, which is that when we're burning those sources of fuel, we just sort of, it's a little bit like being a hamster on a wheel. And if you compare it to a fire that you maybe are creating in your fire pit at your camp, if you are using lighter fluid and newspaper on your fire, you are fueling that fire constantly. It is a constant effort. So if you are on the bike for 5.5 hours, like Jill and I were the other day, and you are constantly just having sugar, 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 it's really hard to keep up with, and it creates, again, back to the blood sugar stability.
And GI issues.
And GI issues. The more you have to eat, the more likely you are to have GI issues. Now, I have always, since my teens, and I didn't recognize it until my 30s, I have had issues with hypoglycemia, which I have low blood sugar issues. So I have to stoke the fire pretty consistently. Since I've been eating in a more fat-adapted or metabolically efficient manner, that is like putting logs on your fire. And it is more sustainable burn.
That makes total sense.
So it is short of ketosis. It is based on a plan by Bob Sibahar, which talks about the metabolic efficiency of being fat adapted, which means just being able to function really well on fats. On the bike that day, so we started about 8:45, we finished at about 5, we didn't probably have dinner until after 6:30. In between that, every hour and a half to 2 hours, I was having, I make these energy bars, I call them paleo pucks, and it's really, it's a lot of fat. It's coconut milk, coconut oil, unsweetened coconut, nut butters, some chia seeds, some cinnamon, and vanilla. There's no sugar in them at all. It is just a little puck of fat love.
That sounds delicious. You got any now? I could go for one right now. That sounds delicious.
And I did insert a little bit of instant coffee into those so that I made sure that I had enough caffeine for the ride.
That sounds awesome.
So I was eating one of those every few hours, and I also fueled that day on just mixed nuts. And I had some turkey sticks, almost like a beef stick would be, that I carried on the bike. So it was all savory. So that stops you from getting sort of that sickening sweet thing that we as athletes sometimes get.
That's so intriguing to me because years ago, you know, the whole idea was we needed the sugar because it was easily obtainable. Mm-hmm. The body could convert it into energy quickly. Fat and protein are not necessarily recommended while you're being active because the body can't convert it into energy quickly enough. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that.
So it is a process to get yourself to this place. I don't recommend that if you're going to run a marathon or do an Ironman next weekend that you do what I just said I did. It takes some time. And that, again, is very bio-individual. So 4 to 10 weeks, depending on how your body processes things, is the time that it might take. Now, if you try to jump on board with this plan and go hammer out a big, intense workout next Saturday, you're going to probably come to me and say, Christine,
you're nuts.
That didn't feel great.
Yeah.
So for endurance athletes, especially who are doing their base building in the spring, that's a really smart time to start bringing this plan on board. Some of the ways that you can get yourself to fat adaptation is start bringing in more fats and reducing the sugar. So you're reducing or eliminating completely added sugar. You're greatly reducing grain consumption in general. So you can still have plenty of carbs, you can have fruit, you can have a great plate of veggies, but I want you to get some olive oil or add some avocado. I want you to bringing that fat in to help that blood sugar stability. Another way to become fat adapted more quickly is to start doing fasting workouts.
Hmm. What is that?
So about 5 days a week, and I'm an early morning workout person, so that helps because if I'm not going to work out until 7:30 or 8, I do have something to eat beforehand. But when I'm working out at 5:45 or 6 o'clock, which is really Monday through Friday for me, I do that without anything in my system. And it helps your body understand, we don't have a really easy... She didn't have a banana before we started this workout, so I don't have any glucose. So I need to pull from the store. We all, no matter how lean we are, we have thousands and thousands of fat calories on our body that can be burned, but we only would have enough glucose to sustain us for about an hour to an hour and a half.
So if there's no glucose readily available, then the body goes, let's go to the storage unit and pull some out of here because I can use that for energy.
That's right.
Okay.
And one thing I always recommend to clients in general is, you know, sort of a quote-unquote intermittent fast, which is become quite a popular little buzz phrase lately. And for me, all that means is not eating after dinner and then not breaking the fast until you can either eat breakfast within an hour because that is good for blood sugar balance. Or again, if you're going to have this kind of fasted workout, that's going to help you get to the fat adapted place. I wouldn't say that to everybody.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that to every single person. There are people that have significant blood sugar balance issues where they should probably not be waking up and doing an hour and a half workout without food. But a lot of us, your body will get used to it. Anybody that knows and loves me can tell you, I used to open my eyes and have food immediately. And I don't do that anymore. I usually am up by 5 a.m. and I usually have breakfast at 7:30. But again, it's because I'm active. If I'm not going to be active until 7:30, I'll eat something before then.
And what's that period of time for the fast? 12 hours-ish?
12 to 14 hours is a really good amount of time. And the other benefit of doing that is when our bodies are constantly digesting, it can't work on other things. It can't work on our immune system. It can't work on brain health. It can't work on development of all the other systems.
So stop eating before you go to bed.
That's right. When you're eating at 10 o'clock, you're still digesting at 2 o'clock in the morning, and your body could be fighting that cold. that germ that you were exposed to today at the grocery store that's festering, that's going to be knocked out of the park if your body has time to do that.
So if you have a relatively, what we would call a normal work schedule,
right?
Dinner then around 6 p.m. maybe, fast until 6 a.m.?
Yep.
And does that mean, I know this sounds probably really picky, but does that mean we finish dinner by 6 p.m. or we can start dinner and be done by almost 7 or something, and then
don't get too wrapped around the axle on exact timing. At my house, same thing. I've got active kids, and so dinner is somewhere between 5:30 and 7, and I just say, okay, well, now it's shut down.
Yep.
There's not going to be, which is not to say that I'm perfect, because there are plenty of nights where popcorn at 8 o'clock on the couch with my family right. sounds like the right thing to do, and I'm not going to deny myself that.
Yeah, good for you.
But as a general rule, I think it's really good to try to maintain that 12 to 14 hours.
And so regardless of that, if that's 6 p.m., you know, we obviously, some of my listeners out there are students, and they go to bed maybe at midnight, so they could maybe have their dinner
I just
at
met
midnight.
With one yesterday, a college student. We had to have a pretty serious conversation about that exact thing.
Yeah, yeah. So if they did have a schedule like that, then if they could be...
a little more fluid.
Until noon the next day. That might be kind of tough.
That would be tough, especially if they were very active. I myself, you know, I've had active clients that say, well, I hear the new thing is intermittent fasting and maybe having some fat in my coffee and not eating until noon. I strongly recommend you see how that feels. That would not ever work for me.
Right. Right. You know, there's something that I refer to often, and it's a term called the near enemy. It's where we take a concept and sort of mold it and finagle it so that it fits our needs, but isn't necessarily the right way or an effective way. So would urge people to be careful about creating that near enemy, making, you know, taking things too far to the extreme. So we've talked about ketosis. We've talked about fat adaptation. Do you have any other suggestions for the endurance athlete listeners out there on how they can better utilize nutrition on a day-to-day basis that will actually improve also their nutritional intake? That's not really the right way, but how they can use nutrition on the go while they're actually doing a workout. We talked about the using more fat and protein once we're adapted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any other suggestions on what endurance athletes could use?
Well, one question that I get a lot from athletes is, so they think about race day and they think about how they should be eating, particularly on race day. Or, Christine, what should I be eating the night before my race? What I would encourage athletes or anybody to look at is the long view. This doesn't start the day before the race. This doesn't start the week before the race. I know that you iron athletes call nutrition the fourth discipline, and it really is. So when you begin your training, say you want to do IM Wisconsin in September. So in March, I want you to not only think about building your base for your athletic events, but I want you to think about building your base for nutrition and think about how the clean eating is going to impact clean eating, whole foods, cutting out processed foods, really giving your body the best chance at being as healthy in its activity as possible, and then building your athlete nutrition. So again, fat adaptation, the perfect thing about it is while you're doing your base building, you can also be working towards being fat adapted. You're cutting the grains, you're cutting the simple sugars, you're bringing in more healthy fats, you're bringing in more protein. So that in that long view over time, your body is really set up for success and lack of gastric issues on race day.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen overnight.
That's perfect. I've had people call me 2 days before their race and exact same thing. Jill, what should I eat the day before my race? Mm-hmm. And at that point, all I can say is, what have you eaten in the past? And even if it's not something I would typically recommend for them, I say, eat that. You know, what should I eat on race day? What have you been eating in the past? And again, even if it's not something I would typically recommend, I say, eat that. Don't change a thing now.
No. Yeah. Because, you know, for me, the word Gatorade kind of gives me a little bit of a rash. But same. I mean, if if that's what you've been training on, I'm not going to tell you to take heat or scratch instead, which are much healthier options. But you don't touch it at that point. It's a little bit like having a client who says, my 7-year-old only eats chicken nuggets and mac and cheese. What can I do to turn that around? Well, that's a process I'm happy to engage in, and I have engaged in, and it's awesome and very fulfilling. But it takes time.
Right.
It takes time. Right. And if they had laid the groundwork for the first 6-7 years, then it's easier to work into, you know, in terms of introducing greens and things like that. But if you're taking, you know, if you're starting in the middle, there's a little bit of work. So like you said, that's not something that, you know, my race is Saturday, it's Tuesday, what am I supposed to eat?
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraging all of you listeners out there, if you have an event that you are gearing up for, write this down in your plan, which is to start paying attention and focusing on your nutrition. Mm-hmm. And maybe talk with Christine or another, you know, nutrition expert on how you can best dial in your nutrition for your event. Don't wait until 2 weeks ahead because it's too late.
That's right.
I'm exaggerating a little bit because, of course, there are some fine-tuning things that you can possibly insert. But you're going to get the best benefit when you train that as diligently and consciously as you are training your intervals and your hill repeats.
And I would say, you know, figuring out what it is for you that makes your body tick. And sometimes that just takes a little journaling. Spend a month writing down what you eat, and then on the opposite side of the page, spending some time journaling about how that made you feel.
That's perfect.
I had a client say the neatest thing to me last week. She said, when I ran a detox recently, what I loved about it was that after I finished my meals, I didn't have a feeling. I didn't feel overstuffed or I didn't feel bloated or I didn't, you know, giving up sugar, gluten, alcohol. There was a lightness, there was a normalcy, and there's a lot of power in just feeling fine and not getting to the end of a meal and noticing how sluggish or bloated or full you are, but just carrying on with the rest of your day.
Right.
There's power in just that normalcy of that. And also, just as a super simple, again, always back to whole foods. When people say to me, how do you keep up with the science? And I'm hearing this and I'm hearing that. And I say, just think to yourself, it's all about whole foods. It's all about shopping the perimeter of the store. If it comes from a plant, don't eat it. If it is a plant, eat it.
What does that mean?
Thank you, Michael Pollan.
If it doesn't come from a plant, what does that mean?
Processed food.
Oh, if it doesn't come from a plant. Okay.
Right. Processed food.
Yeah.
You know, put the boxes away.
So no Cheetos?
Probably not Cheetos. Yeah. Probably Cheetos. Not Cheetos, and probably not those gluten-free Fig Newtons that are shouting at you from the shelf.
So I have a favorite junk food, which is Cheetos. It literally is Cheetos, and I like so many people, the best part is licking the cheese off my fingers at the end.
And the really crunchy bits of them.
Yes, I love. I do them very seldom, a couple times a year, quite honestly.
That's awesome.
And it's usually because I'm having a craving. Usually it's because of an emotional, something emotional, right. Like the day is not going well, and I'm like, I just want to give myself a treat. So I go for the Cheetos. And they're gluten-free, so that is...
Oh, gosh. How funny. I had never thought of that. So well, the question then is, Jill, when you do that, do you let yourself have that moment?
Oh, my God. I enjoy it. I totally love it. And that's one thing that I've always shared with my clients. It's like, if you're really craving something like that, don't eat it. And with every bite, follow it with the thought, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be doing this. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm a terrible person for doing this. I shouldn't be caving, because then emotionally we don't even get satisfied. When you get done, it's not like you're saying, oh, that was awesome and I'm, you know, enjoyed it. You're saying, I want more, because you've not allowed yourself to be emotionally satisfied. So here's my question for you. My thing was Cheetos. What is one of your guilty pleasures? Show us your human
side.
Well,
Jill, what did I have in Aspen after we finished our big bike ride?
Well, you did.
What did I make sure we were all going to have?
Yeah. We chose the restaurant based on what Christine wanted that day.
I do love, gluten-free garbage, though it may be garbage, it is still a treat. And that is my favorite treat after a fun day like that, is to have a really sometimes they can be really good and the crusts are getting better, but a gluten-free pizza. Mm-hmm. So that's what I had with a big salad that night after the ride. So that is a treat for me. I am completely sugar-free. So for me, being decadent in something like that is quite a treat, and I do enjoy it.
So we are both human. Absolutely. I promise you. I have a Snickers here and there, which is delicious. And typically when I'm in the mountains, I crave a really good burger.
Okay.
And, you know, my thought is probably getting a little extra iron.
Right.
And get some red blood cells going.
Yep.
And a Snickers. That's just something that was instilled in me the first year I came out here skiing when I was 19.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't try to fight those fun things. But eating mindfully is something I talk to every client about. You know, like you said, we can only be truly nourished by what's on our plate if we are really sort of take a moment to be grateful for it and put our fork down between bites and enjoy the company that we're keeping. If we're noshing mindlessly in front of the TV, that's when a lot of the overeating comes in, because our brain and our gut are so connected, and if they're not getting the messages that I'm truly nourished, it's easy to just whip through a bag of Cheetos or whatever it may be.
One of the beautiful things that I've had the opportunity to experience with Christine is her love of cooking. And on one of my previous podcasts, I talked about having a couple of friends who I've been able to observe cook, and they just love it, and they like put all this creative energy into it. And so I'm thanking you publicly for being that role model
for
me,
that.
Because oftentimes I kind of grew up thinking cooking was kind of a pain in the rear end.
Right.
And when I can shift my mindset and go, God, this is an awesome creative outlet, then I totally enjoy it. And I can't help that doesn't change the energetic composure of the food as well.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I have my mother got me an awesome Dishtal a couple weeks ago, and it said, show people you love them, cook them good food.
That's great. Good little reminders around that, too.
It is good little reminders.
So as we are beginning to bring this to a close today, one of the questions I love asking my interviewees is their favorite song. So, Christine, what is a favorite song that you have?
So I gave this some thought. I was prepared, I'll admit it. To sort of circle back to my journey to getting to Colorado, I have a lot of favorite songs, but one of the ones that's the most emotional for me is John Denver's Rocky Mountain High. Mm-hmm. And what really resonated with me through my journey was he was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. I came to Colorado for the first time when I was 29 years old, and I knew it was home the minute I crossed the border. And I was with a mutual amazing friend of ours, Mary, at the time, and we were on a summer journey. All summer I was teaching, so we spent 3 months traveling around the country, and the minute I set foot and saw those mountains, I knew. And so that started my 5-year journey to getting here. And I stayed at a ranch here we are properly in Edwards, Colorado, that is about not even a mile from my current home. And it is across the street from the school that my oldest and youngest, my daughters, went to kindergarten with. So 1997, I stayed at the ranch. In 2007, Graziella started kindergarten there. And that was just a really amazing full circle moment for me to have manifested that. And so that song, every time I hear it, it just gets straight to my heart. So... Now
both
we're
of us,
both welling up.
Yeah, both of us are welling up here. You can't see us, but we both have a few tears coming out, because it really is it's such a beautiful story of manifestation. Mm. I just want to encourage all of you listeners out there to really slow down, take a deep breath, eat good food so that you are building a strong foundation upon which to create this life that you love, manifest the things that you love. So important. You have this one life to live, and making it yours so you're not just living reflexively is really our soul's purpose.
That's right.
It's what we're here to do.
That's right.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being here with me today and letting me come into your beautiful valley.
It's fantastic.
Fueling my spirit and my soul. I do not want to leave. It's going to be hard for me to drive down the mountain a little bit later today,
yeah.
but I'll still be in Denver, so that'll be a
That's
great,
right.
that'll still be a great treat.
That's right.
So thank you, listeners, for being here with us today. In closing, I want you to think about one thing that you can do to light up your life. Make that one thing, I'm going to impose something on you here, make that one thing be something nutrition-based today, since we've talked about nutrition. You know, what is the one thing that you can begin eliminating out of your diet that you probably know doesn't serve you very well? And what's maybe one thing that you can add to your diet that's going to take its place and be a positive impact or a positive source? Thank you for being here. If you are listening to this from iTunes, please go to my website at Jill M. Summers, that's SOMMERS.com, and click on the podcast page where you can easily add your name in the box, so then you will be notified every time that there's a new podcast and you won't need to go out searching for it. And please continue to, you know, look around on the page. I have a lot of other great podcasts out there right now. We have Rudy's Road to Kona, which is Ruth Payne's road to getting to Ironman World Championships this October in Hawaii. That's a whole series. And we have some other really great podcasts on there for you to listen to. So as we're going out, we're going to actually listen to a little John Denver, Rocky Mountain High. Enjoy. This is Jill with Jill M. Summers Performance Coaching. Grateful for you to be here listening today. See you on the next podcast.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road and hanging by a song. But the string's already broken and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast and it don't last for long. But the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire. Softer than a lullaby, Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado,
Rocky Mountain High,
Colorado.
He climbed cathedral mountains, he saw silver clouds below, he saw everything as far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once and he tried to touch the sun. And he lost a friend but kept a memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side is turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. And the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Talk to God and listen to the casual reply. Rocky Mountain High, Rocky Mountain High.
Thanks for being with us today. We invite you to join us on our mission to move people forward and upward. Go to JillMSummers.com. That's Jill M S O M M E R S.com for more information and to listen to other inspiring podcasts. And remember to do one thing today that moves your life forward, which impacts others around you to do the same.